Don't worry.
You do what
Kof
you
must do. Vov Tammuz, Thursday the 20th of July, Dr. Sholem Springer, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Yavne and Yerushalayim.
Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
What we're going to do this morning are two Agadatas, in two different Gemaras and two different Masechtas, in fact. We're going to look at that in connection and in the context of the Churban Bayis. The shiur this morning is based on a shiur that I heard and I listened to from Rabbi David Foreman, who has a Torah Institute in America. And I will try to put it over as best I can and as best I understand it. So we are moving towards Tisha B'Av. We just heard some halachas of the 9 days. And of course, the whole purpose of the 9 days, of the 3 weeks, and Tisha B'Av itself, which is all rabbinic, yeah, you don't find that in the Torah, is in order that we should get some sort of feeling, some sort of discomfort that we should create for ourselves, so that we can turn that discomfort towards the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah. But let's face it, gentlemen, let's face it, that when we are talking about somebody we are mourning for, we're sitting in our velas for, we knew that person was here, that person is no longer here, and it is the loss of that person we are mourning. But when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, we say we are mizabel for the Beis HaMikdash. Nobody can say that they knew somebody, that they knew somebody, that knew someone that had any shaykhus of the Beis HaMikdash. This is all too long ago. So what are we mourning? So what are we mourning? How do we mourn for somebody that we never knew? We cry on Tisha B'Av, but is it real or is it hypocritical? Are we just crying because our Chachomim have instructed us to do so? Or can we get into ourselves some sort of feeling where we're crying for something we have some sort of understanding and real feeling for? So the fact is that we do it, and it happened 2,000 years ago. It's a very long time ago, historically speaking. And we know that our nation experienced the destruction, and in a sense, it's abstract because we haven't got any shaykhus to that Beis HaMikdash now. And so therefore, it's something that we know, something in our consciousness, we grow up with it. So the question is it for real? How do I begin to relate to it? And I hope through this year, and obviously many others that you're having, we can get some sort of connection and understanding of what the Avelis is all about. So maybe we have to look at other questions which surround this one, which will shed light on what we're talking about. How did our nation survive? We do have a nation, we claim we have a nation. We lost a temple, but a long, long time ago, but we lost our sovereignty, we lost our land, and all the things that normally makes up a nation, we lost all of that. So it's distributed, we're scattered over the world, and yet, somehow or other, miraculously, the Jewish nation remained a nation. And that's an amazing thing. And of course, that's one of the pleas that Gemara talks about it. You know, the great nest that's happened of the survival of the Jewish people is the subject of lots of other shiurim. I'm just going to point it out as a fact, and it'll tie in with what we are saying this morning. So I don't just mean the Jewish religion has survived. We have survived as a nation. So, for example, you know, if someone in the ancient world came to visit us, walked into this shiur, just assuming he can understand English, from 1,000 years ago, he'd be able to machmit, he'd be able to join in all that we're saying, and the Mishnah Berurah shiur that came before, for example, we have to understand these dinim, they are unchanged, that we'd be able to relate to people in the past. But can any modern nation out there relate to the ancient people? If an ancient Persian walked in to Iran today, would they understand anything that's going on? Probably not even the language, because probably the language has changed. And yet today we are able to call ourselves a nation, go anywhere in the world, and you can find other Yidden, you can find people that you can relate to, you can go to a shul, and the davening's the same as your davening that you're used to. We have managed to stay alive as a nation. Even if Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, walked in, Moshe Rabbeinu would be able to join us together, join together with us. And of course, Moshe Rabbeinu, although never saw the Beis HaMikdash, would be able to join with us for being Mitzavah, or the Beis HaMikdash that we did have, because Moshe Rabbeinu understood, of course, what a Beis HaMikdash was all about. So our nationhood has endured, and we have suffered catastrophic losses, and nevertheless managed to survive. So in other words, the survival of the Jewish nation and the fact that we are a nation are two questions. And the why do we cry on Tisha B'Av is the other question that I started off with. So the survival of the Jewish nation and the fact that we cry on Tisha B'Av are joined together. And if we can collect those, we might have some understanding of what is going on. And what I want to talk about this morning, and that's in the title, is the Agadatas in the Gemara that deal with the town called Yavneh. And by understanding both the creation of Yavneh and what happened there, we may be able to get some line on what these Gedolim, these figures, these characters in the Gemara were trying to achieve. So it was, if you like, I'll just introduce it this way, a sort of lifeboat, that what was going on, and when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked Vespasian to save Yavneh, it was a sort of attempt to understand that we can't have the old institutions, can't have the base of Mikdash, can't have the courthouses that we had in Yerushalayim, but it was something else. So let us go through a few parts. I'm going to be very selective because I want certain parts of the story. We all know this story. We all learn it on Tisha B'Av. So I'm going to pick out a few bits from the Gemara in Gittin which are relevant to our discussion. And we come into the picture of the question about what to do with the Roman siege. Habu Hanu Baryoine, there were these Baryoine, Rashi says, I'm not sure, Rekim, they were sort of zealots, they were very, very militaristic, militants, we'd call them nowadays. Amalu Rabbanon, Nechem, and Abid, Shalma, Berpardayu. So the Rabbanon said to them, let us make Shalom with the Romans. Loishavkinu, they wouldn't let. They wouldn't allow this to happen. Amalu Luhu, so the Baryoinim said to the Rabbanon, Nepuk v'navid kurva badayu. Let's make war. Let's attack the Romans, the Roman garrison. Avru l'arbonon loimus time ilsa. It won't win. It won't be successful with this. Komu kalnu lahanu amobre dechitius oire v'habakafna. So what they did was, these Baryoine, they set a light to the corn, dechitius oire, all the storehouses, and the Gemara says somewhere else that there was enough corn in Yerushalayim to keep them going for 22 years. So they burnt all this corn, so they wanted to force the hand of the people. Come, fight the Romans. You're going to eat. Baba Kafna, and there was starvation. Then there's the story about a figure called Marta Baspaisus, a very wealthy woman. I won't go through all of that. We know that story. And in the end, she died. Why did she die? Groi grois de rabit soda ochlo vis nisa. She was an Istanis, very fussy person, very wealthy person. She ate the groi grois that rabit sodaik had sucked all the juice out of Umeso, the Rotzodik Yosef Abroim Shinin Batanis, that Rotzodik had been pravering, had been doing a Tanis, had been conducting himself the Tanis for 40 years, the Loi Lichor of Yerushalayim, so that Yerushalayim should not be destroyed. And so when he ate something, they could see it going down the throat. It's not about our week that we need today. Our Sikra, we are told, this gentleman was the nephew of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. So there's a conversation between this head of the Baryoine, Abba Sikra, and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai persuades Abba Sikra to spirit him out of Yerushalayim. And we all know that he went into a coffin and pretended to be dead, and they got him out one way or the other. They were stopped on the way, but they managed to get through. He wanted to create some sort of Hatzolah Pruta, some sort of salvation maybe we can get. Riochan and Manzake wanted to be taken out of the town. Eventually they got out, and then he came across and he sought out Vespasian. Vespasian was the general of the army, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai approaches Vespasian and greets him, and he says, Shalmalach Malka, he says, hail, O king, hail, king. And Vespasian's very angry. This is a treasonable offence to call somebody who's not king, to call him king. So he says, there are two things that you're guilty of and chayav misa for. One, you're calling me king and I'm not a king. And the other thing is, if I'm a king, you should have come here sooner. So Yochanan ben Zakkai says, but you may not be king, but you're shortly going to be king. The Gemara tells us that what happened very shortly after us, minutes after that, some horsemen rode up and told Vespasian that the emperor had died, the Caesar had died, and now he was appointed the new Caesar. Well, Vespasian is extremely impressed. You know, he obviously knew this in advance through some sort of Nevi'ahs, and he offered him, what can I do for you? I'll give you sort of three wishes. What can I do for you? And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai tells him, says the following, Now, let's just raise the question before we give the answer of what he actually said. You would have thought that the most important thing on the agenda, you know, was Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim. And in fact, the Gemara raises it. Why didn't he ask for Yerushalayim? He asked for something else. He says to him, I want three things. I want Yavne v'chachomeha. Now, Yavne is a place on the coastal town. It's a coastal town, you know, a bit north of Ashkelon. And it's all full of sand. It's a sort of nothing place, nothing particular. I want Yavne and its chachomim. Shishulta Darog Gamliel. I want the strain, the family strain of Rabbi Gamliel. Basvosa de Masayan Leila Ratzodek. I want a doctor for Rabbi Tzodek. He asked for these three things. Now, remember, we are talking about national issues here. Here is an opportunity for Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to save the Jewish people or do something, Hatzolah Pruta, as he called it. And he asked for these three things, which don't seem terribly important. Don't seem terribly important. And the question is, why did he ask for just these three things? And is there something particularly significant in the questions that he asked? So with that, and of course he granted, Vespasian granted these three wishes, and this is therefore the creation of the town of Yavne. Yavne and its chachomim, Yavne and its yeshiva. So this is the point at which it's created. So the fact is that having learnt the Gemara, as I say, I've been very selective, haven't done the whole Agadita. This is it's very well known to everybody, so I don't have to go through it all. But the main and salient points that we want to talk about are those three requests that Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked for. So let's have a look. In order to do that, what I'd like to do is to look at another Gemara. This Gemara deals with the most famous machlokes, one of the most famous machlokes in Shas, which is quoted again and again, and again you're very familiar with it. And it also takes place in Yavne. It's a very famous machlokes which takes place in Yavne. So I've already got a connection to something about the creation of Yavne and this machlokes which takes place in Yavne. And it all turns around a certain oven. This oven that they had, and an oven you must think of as sort of almost a cylinder with an opening at the front, right? That's an oven. And this particular oven that chotchu chulyois v'nosen choyel bein chulya l'chulya. This particular oven had been smashed, yeah, been obliterated in somehow, and they put it together. And the way it was smashed was not just it was smashed into smithereens, but it was cut into slices. Okay, there were parallel slices. And each slice looked like a chulya, like a vertebra. Okay, so you've got the sort of vertebrae of all these slices. And what someone had done, they'd put that oven back together again by sticking it together, by putting sand between the slices. And therefore the oven was a sort of structure again, but it was a very shaky structure, if you like, because it was connected with sand. And so there's a machlokas between Rabbi Lezer and the Chachomim about the status of this particular tunnel. It's a tunnel of snakes, because all the arguments around it were snakes. And the Gemara tells us of how this argument between Rabbi Lezer and the Chachomim unfolded. That Rabbi Lezer called Shuvas Ba'olam. Rabbi Lezer held that this oven was Tohoyer. Under all circumstances, even if a dead body had touched this oven, the oven remains Tohoyer. And he put forward, he advanced many, many arguments to Rabbi Lezer. Answered lots of arguments. Like Kiblu Yemenu, and Chachomim did not accept any of the arguments. They knocked them down one by one. Omar Lahem, and he said to them, Im halacha kamaisi, if the halacha, he ran out of arguments, because they always rejected these arguments. If the halacha is like me, then choruv ze yochiach. Then let this carob tree be mochiach. Let's have a nest that the carob tree will show, min hashamayim, so to speak, that I am right. So the Gemara says, the carob tree jumped up and moved 100 amos up the road. So all of a sudden there's a miracle. So they said to him, so to speak, nice miracle, but we don't bring any rais because you made a tree jump 400 amos. Let the aqueduct, where water is flowing down the aqueduct, let it be yochiach. And of course, as you know, the aqueduct started flowing backwards, and the Chachomim once again says, we don't bring any rias from and Amas Hamayim. Omalehim Elocha Kamoisi, Koisle Besa Medrish Yechichu. Let the Koisle Besa Medrish, let the walls itself bring a raya, bring me proof. And Hitu Koisle Besa Medrish Lipoil. And the Koisle Besa Medrish were now caving in, were slanting in, and were about to fall. Goa Aleim Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua jumped up and he shouted at the walls. It says that Omalehim. Im Talmidei Chachomim menatzchim zeh zeh b'halacha. If the Talmidei Chachomim are arguing with each other, having machloikas about Torah, atim mativchem. So what have you got to do with this argument? The Kohen Beis Hamikdash are collapsing on us. The Gemara says, Loi naflu b'drigun mitnei kavoyde shel Yeshua. So they stopped falling. Okay, they stopped falling. They were in a slanting position. Loi zokfu, but they didn't go back to their position out of the honor kavoyde shel Rabbi Elazar. Va'adayin motin va'oindin. And the Koisle Beis Hamikdash are like that to the present day, wherever that Beis Hamikdash is. Chosav Amalehem. So Rabbi Elazar is running out of road, if you like. Chosav Amalehem, Ibalocha Kamoisi, Minashamayim Yechichu, Yotza Baskoil. Baskoil came down. Omro Malachem Eitzel Velozer, Shalocha Kamoisi Bechol Mokoim. It's always like a Rabbi Elazar, so the Alocha is like him, and this oven is Tohoya, like he says. Omer Rabbi Shua, a Ragla Ba'omer, Loi Bashamayim, the Torah is down here, not in heaven, it is for us to Paskin, and in the Torah, Mai Loi Bashamayim, Omer Rabbi Yirmiyah, Shikva Nitna Torah, that Ein On Mashkichim Babaskal, we do not listen to Babaskal, Shikva Kosum Baha Sinai, Achari Rabbim Lahatos, we are the Rabbim, you are Yochid, and the rules are not in heaven, the rules are down here, Loi Bashamayim, And then there's a little sequel to this story, very interesting. Ashkechei Rabbi Nosson L'Aliyohu, Omelem Mai, Oved HaKudosh Baruch Hu Bahishat. It wasn't Rabbi Shalom doing it this time. And he says, Kochayich, he's laughing. Rabbi Shalom was laughing, and he was saying, Vom Nitzchuni Bonai, that Rabbi Shalom was so pleased that they had actually not only kept the Torah, used the Torah in the right way, and we established the idea of Loi Bashamayim. So what we're going to try and do is put these two things together. And just let me say, the machloket between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim was this, whether the oven is Toy or Tomei. Not everything can become Tomei when it touches the dead body. For example, a stone does not become Tomei. It's got to be a Keli. So the argument between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim was, is this oven a Keli or not a Keli? Rabbi Elazar Kahalten, it's not a Keli. It's a smashed oven. That's what it is. It's not a Keli. And the Chachamim held, it's a Keli. It's been put together. And even though it's on sand, it's the glue that's sticking together is sand, putting all the chulias together, that is true. But nevertheless, even though it's a very unstable keli in many ways, that the sand connects all the pieces, and it's still got a din of a keli, and therefore can become tome. So that's the machlokes. So this is, if you like, this is the suggestion for this shir, that this is a dugma, a suggestion, that what they're really talking about is the role of Yavne. If Yotam and Zakkai had asked for this town to be saved with its Chachamecha, and the question was that is the survival of the Jewish people possible without having its institutions? We don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have all the places that we used to have in Yerushalayim, which was the established place in Klal Yisrael, and we need those institutions in order that our nation can actually function as a nation. So that was the question. And the machloikas in Yavne that took place later, that we can read as a very strange machloikas about an oven, is in fact an allegory for the role of Klal Yisrael post Beis HaMikdash, after we had been thrown out of Yerushalayim. And so therefore, this allegory is the institution of Klal Yisrael still a proper keli? The Chachomim said, yes, although it's stuck together and we don't have the institutions, that's true. But Lamais, we got something else. We got Yavne v'Chachomel. We got Yavne and the Chachomim, we've still got Torah. And Torah can be learnt. And Torah can be the infusion into Klal Yisrael to make it into a nation, to continue as a nation. And Rabbi Elazar Kahalten, it's not a Keli anymore. If we haven't got Yerushalayim, without a Beis HaMikdash, without those institutions, how are we going to function as a nation without those institutions? And in fact, the Gemara calls this place Yavne, Kerem BeYavne. That's to the present day, it's called Kerem BeYavne. And the truth is that you couldn't plant a single vine there. It's sand. There is no fertile earth there. And nevertheless, it's called Kerem BeYavne. And the Gemara asks this question, Kerem BeYavne, what's the pshat in Kerem BeYavne? And it says, you know why? Because you've got rows and rows of Talmidei Chachomim. They are the vines. That's what it's talking about. Kerem B'Yavneh. So in other words, it grows like a vine because of the Talmid HaChomer, not because there's a real vine there. There's no vineyard in Yavneh. So the debate about the Tanna is really about Yavneh, and it represents the Jewish nation. Has the Jewish nation been smashed or not? The Romans have laid siege to all our institutions, enslaved the people, nothing left. So the nation is shattered. But with the creation of Yavneh, we are attempting to stitch together, like we stitched together that oven, albeit with sand, in such a way that it can still function as a sort of lifeboat. It can be something that we have in Golus that will keep the nation together. And therefore it's a repaired keli, and it really is, according to the Chomim, really is a keli, and it's not just shards or smashed keli that doesn't function as a keli. That was the machlokas between the Chachomim and Rabbi Eliezer. So the nation lives on in the walls of the Beis HaMedrash. And we use the word motin. The Gemara says motin, they lean. And we've also got that word occurring as well, achari rabim lahatos. We lean towards the majority. Yes, Rabbi Eliezer, you've got lovely riots, you've got all your miracles, etc. But we are establishing that lo b'shamayim hi, that this is how we run the Torah, and the Baruch Shalom has given us reshus to do that. Kachai, the Baruch Shalom is so pleased that Klal Yisrael are able to function, even without its institutions, without its Beis HaMikdash, it's able to function as a nation, and able to function with this Bat Yedidim outside of Yerushalayim, and nevertheless keep going as a nation. So when Rabbi Eliezer brings all those proofs from the carob tree and the aqueduct and the walls, these are symbols that he's using of nationhood. You know, we use these sorts of things, wood from a carob tree, and of course a nation, a population needs water, and you need to build your institutions with buildings. So Rabbi Eliezer is saying, look, I'm bringing a raya from all these things that I can make move in order to convince you that we don't have it anymore, that in fact Klal Yisrael is not functioning anymore. And we don't have the courts and the schools and the shuls, etc. They're all gone, says Rabbi Eliezer. And the Chachomim are saying, we're not going to bring rayas from the established old order. There is a new order. There is a new way that Klal Yisrael can live. And that is with the Torah and with its institutions being those which are ours and which we can keep as a Torah nation and keep going. Rav Hubner says something very nice, and I think I mentioned it in a shiur like this before, which is sometimes bitul shel Torah zu kayomo. That's a Gemara. Sometimes the bitul of Torah can be the harbinger of its kayomo, of its longevity. Because sometimes you need to do things, and the example that's brought is when Moshe Rabbeinu smashed the luchos. When he smashed the luchos, you might have thought that it's the most terrible disaster. In fact, the Gemara, in fact, Borishon compliments Moshe Rabbeinu that Yashakochim Asheshi Baruto, thank you very much, you did absolutely the right thing. Because had the luchos not been broken, Klal Yisrael would have been in trouble. Now that the luchos were broken, it meant that there shikha in Torah, that there was forgetfulness in Torah, and that means the Torah would be learned through the generations, and there would be a regeneration of Torah through the fact that people were learning it, whereas if it was just given to us as a complete Shulchan Aruch, just a list of rules, it would have soon fallen into disrepair. So we have an establishment of a new Sanhedrin in Yavneh. And by the way, it's been pointed out that the word Yavneh can also be rewritten as Yiboneh. Yiboneh, this is the place where the Jewish people are going to be reborn, and there is going to be a rebuilding. So it's not in any way entirely destroyed. So who wins this argument? Rabbi Eliezer has got so many proofs on his side, but nevertheless, what won the day in that particular machlokas, as we know, and we must be happy, we must be thankful, because we are the beneficiaries, being able to continue Klal Yisrael in the way that we can, because we understand that the central focus is Torah, the central focus is the Chachomim, and what they can give us, that therefore, that has saved the nation. But the fact is, coming back to the Beis HaMikdash, we must never rule out, we must never feel that we have arrived, and therefore we can continue the Jewish nation this way. One of the requests of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to Vespasian, and remember the second one is, Shushilta de Rabbi Gamliel, that I want you to preserve the family of Rabbi Gamliel. What is special about Rabbi Gamliel? Why Rabbi Gamliel? Why does it matter him among all the other people? And the Gemara tells us, because Rabbi Gamliel could trace his ancestry back to David HaMelech. David HaMelech represents the institution of Klal Yisrael, the Malchus of Klal Yisrael. And not him, but his son, Shlomo, built the Beis HaMikdosh. So that means, although we have a lifeboat here in Yavneh and other institutions outside Yerushalayim, and Klal Yisrael can carry on going, Klal Yisrael can survive, so we have a survival kit. But the fact is, if we've got Rabbi Gamliel, then we have a connection to the Beis HaMikdosh with the family of Rabbi Gamliel. The Ishtalshelus continues. And this is important for us, that we don't just cut off and say, well, we can live in a new way. We continuously have in mind the fact that what we want our old institutions back, but in the right way. We couldn't have it then. And coming back to the question the Gemara asks, why didn't Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ask Vespasian for Yerushalayim? And the answer was, he understood that Yerushalayim is not on the cards. Vespasian had been tasked to destroy Yerushalayim. There was no way on earth, historically speaking, that he could go back to his emperor and say, well, I left Yerushalayim alone. You were meant to destroy Yerushalayim. So that was a non-negotiable point. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew he couldn't ask Yerushalayim, but what could he ask for? He could ask for Yavne v'chachamehu. Vespasian would never have understood the significance of Yavne. Never. You know, if you'll tell me the Chachomim learning in this sandy place on the coast of Eretz Yisrael, it's not going to do us any harm. I've smashed the Jewish nation. Let those old scholars carry on learning as far as we're concerned. That's not going to harm us. He didn't understand that what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was forming was an actual lifeboat for the whole of Klal Yisrael, that it was going to survive. And another connection, of course, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai understood was Rabbi Tzodok. Rabbi Tzodok, we talked about, he had fasted for 40 years in order that Yerushalayim should not be nechrab, Yerushalayim should not be destroyed. He was the man that had all the passion for Yerushalayim, and he fasted all that time. And he was the one that connects us most greatly, if you like, most strongly with Yerushalayim. So therefore, Yochanan ben Zakkai had to have him in the lifeboat. We've got to have Rav Tzodok. Rav Tzodok will keep our connection back to Yerushalayim, and therefore he asked Vespasian something trivial. Give me a doctor for Rabbi Tzodok, yeah, that he should survive. And so coming back also to the 3 weeks, 9 days, may one say that what our Chachamim have done with all the halachas that surround this period of time, what they've tried to do for us is a masterpiece of psychology. What they've said to us, be uncomfortable. That's what your duty is during this time. First start with not listening to music, don't mind your clothes, and then, you know, turn on the pressure a little bit. You can't wash properly, can't put on fresh clothes. So you're actually meant to be uncomfortable. And this discomfort that we are feeling for Tisha B'Av itself, we're deprived of all physical needs completely. And by being uncomfortable, we can transfer our discomfort to something that, although we didn't have experience of, nevertheless, we feel for something that we have lost. We're not in our proper state. We're not in our comfortable state. We're not in our comfort zone. So Chachamim have given us a set of dinim whereby we will be connected somehow to something we've lost. And if we study what the Beis HaMikdash was about and what it meant to a Yid back in those days, Simba Zissel talks about it, Chaim Volozhin talks about it, that's where the Yidden would go if they wanted some spiritual uplift. They'd go to the Beis HaMikdash, see all the miracles that were happening there, certainly in the first Beis HaMikdash, and I always like to think of it this way. You know, when they were miles away, one of the miracles, you remember, one of the lists of the Beis HaMikdash, was that the column of smoke from the Mizbeah rose vertically upwards. What does that mean? Even if there was a howling gale. It was a gale all over the place, that column of smoke would rise vertically upwards. That means a Yid traveling in his horse and cart, when he was already miles away from Yerushalayim, he could see the column of smoke. That must have lifted his spirits before he even got there. And when he got there, he saw Marekoyen and all the other things that were happening in the Beis HaMikdash. So if you know what the Beis HaMikdash meant for Eid in those days, then we can get to engender some sort of feeling there is a loss. I didn't know it personally, but I can know something about it. And that's what our Chachamim wanted to achieve. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai achieved. With all the Torah learning going on, that's his chus, he planted Torah in Klal Yisrael, and therefore we are still in this lifeboat. If we don't get too comfortable here, we feel a feeling of golus, then we will be zoicha to have a gula shleima b'koroi b'meir b'yamein.